Hello and welcome to another episode of Your Average Critics. I'm joined by Obi today. How are you?
Not too shabby, mate. How are you?
Good, thank you. Happy bank holiday. One of three we've got this month. Just before I forget, because I always do, we've got TikTok now. We are Your Average Critics on there, and we've got one post, and it's got 2,223 views. So.
Oh, wow. Go on, us.
I know. So hopefully that's translated into a few more listeners. So welcome if you're quite new to the pod. So please do follow us on there. That took me ages to do. So I don't know how frequently we'll be posting on there. But we are also on Instagram as Your Average Critics and Twitter at YSC Podcast 17. So, yeah, you can get in touch with us by a multitude of channels. Let's do some film news. So there was another film convention last week called CinemaCon. And all of the big studios actually had kind of panels there.
I looked into actually trying to get tickets to go to this thing. It's in Las Vegas, I think. But it's like, if you're like not a member of like a press something or other, it's like $3,000. I was like, yeah, it's not worth it.
$3,000? Oh my God.
Silly.
Well, also based on the seemingly lack of new stuff that was announced, I don't know if that would have been worth it.
No.
But, you know, we can go through it kind of studio by studio. I'm reading this from bleedingcool.com, so thanks for collating that. So Sony, they had footage from Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, Gran Turismo, and Kraven the Hunter, which is the Aaron Taylor Johnson picture.
Who's in Gran Turismo? Sorry.
Who's in Gran Turismo?
Yeah, is there anyone we know?
Let me just Google that for you. But it's directed by Neil Blomkamp, who did Chappie and District 9. Kraven the Hunter apparently is going to be R-rated, which as soon as that's put against some sort of superhero product, everyone goes, oh, it must be great then.
Mm.
I mean, you know, Morbius here was a 15, that was shit.
Yeah.
You know, Suicide Squad, I think, was well received, but wasn't a financial hit, so... Yeah.
To be fair, I heard that the clip that they showed was quite gruesome. So
yeah, I mean, it seems to at least get people initially interested putting an R rating on it, but it has to be good. Gran Turismo is starring Archie Madekwe, who was in Midsommar and a Apple TV Plus series called C. David Harbour, Orlando Bloom, Jimon Hounsou.
Mm.
Jerry Halliwell? Surely not. Oh, that is that. Ginger Spice, yeah, apparently she's in it.
Fair enough.
Okay. So, yeah. That's happening this year. But yeah, I mean, other things. There was Insidious The Red Door. I think it's Insidious 5 now. And then some stuff with the Jennifer Lawrence comedy, No Hard Feelings. I think there's another Ghostbusters film coming, and Equalizer 3, which I saw a trailer for and didn't even realise was happening.
Yeah, I had no idea that was happening. I'm surprised now, because I feel like there wasn't there this whole big thing about how Denzel doesn't do sequels, or something like that. And now he's done 3 Equalizers.
Yeah, I'm trying to think off the top of my head if I can think of another Denzel sequel. Nothing's coming to me immediately. Maybe he saw, like, didn't Queen Latifah do a series of The Equalizer?
I watched one episode of that, it was fucking terrible.
Yeah, maybe he saw that and was like, oh no, I can't let that be the last Equalizer thing that was out.
Yeah.
I mean, I think people were hoping to get some sort of Spider-Man 4 announcement or other kind of big Sony Marvel stuff apart from Kraven the Hunter, but alas, no.
Isn't there another, is it Madam Web that Sony are doing?
Not according to this, not that I saw. That's with Sydney Sweeney and Dakota Johnson, isn't it?
Yeah.
Nope, nothing about that. I think I'll just skip over Warner Brothers quickly to Walt Disney. I don't think there was anything huge there either. Not that we already knew of, so there was footage from Indiana Jones 5, Guardians 3, Haunted Mansion. We all knew about those. Mm. Yeah, doesn't necessarily... again, they're not revealing much more. They didn't reveal anything more than we already knew that I'm aware of. Not kind of superhero related anyway. Have we got a D23 happening this year?
I'm actually not sure. I would think so, but I don't know, you never know with Disney, do you?
Supposedly June to July. June 12th to July 31st. I mean, I'm sure it won't be every day. Yeah.
They're quite sporadic with their announcements, Disney. Like, you never know what they're going to announce and when. Because there's so many opportunities to announce stuff. I think they're very selective of when they want to. When they want to do it.
I feel like they've got so much to announce, though.
Mm.
You know, we've got next to no information about Fantastic Four. Anything kind of filling the gaps in schedule after the Marvels comes out.
Mm.
We still don't know that much about Captain America 4. Yeah, so there's probably quite a lot that they could announce. Maybe they need to hold fire. Maybe they're waiting for certain legal issues to be concluded.
Yeah.
Mm. I think we've touched upon that in previous episodes, so, you know, I'm not aware of any new developments on that. Although, it was at the Guardians 3 premiere, someone asked James Gunn, what's the future of Ezra Miller going to be in the DCU? And he sort of, his eyes were just like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
I think he said something like, oh, we'll kind of have discussions once the film's out and things have been resolved or something like that. It was a very kind of non-committal answer. But
That's code for, if the film makes money, he's still going to be the Flash.
Mm.
Like, there is, I guarantee, at the end of the day, yeah, money is king in the film industry. If that film makes, like, I don't know, upwards of, let's say, 700 million, 100 million percent, he's going to still be the Flash. I guarantee it.
Is there a double standard?
If that happens, then yes, you have to say so. Also, to be fair, we are yet to see what is going to happen with, Jonathan Majors, but obviously you think about like Johnny Depp and Amber Heard and that whole situation. You have to admit that, yeah, the double standard is there. What were those two in again? Aquaman. Actually, for Aquaman did really well, and Amber Heard is still, I think, has been cut out of it, or pretty much been cut out of it. So, and then Johnny Depp with Harry Potter. To be fair, the Harry Potter film did not do well, so. Doesn't surprise me that they didn't see that as a high risk, taking them out of that. But if I think for DC or Warner Brothers even, if it will be a high risk for them if they have what is anticipated to be probably the most successful DCEU film, seeing all the fanfare about it from the premiere, then for them to take the star of that film out of it, I think is a risk they're probably not willing to take because of the fact that they are flailing a bit and they are kind of, you know, a bit disorganised with their whole universe and all that shit, but also.
Yeah, I mean, it's not quite the same, but, you know, Ray Fisher has struggled since he fell out with,
Walter Hamada.
That's it. You know, I've not actually seen him in anything since, I don't think.
Me either.
So he obviously kind of was shunned, and yet, you know, the stuff that Ezra Miller has been accused of doesn't seem to have caused them any. Well, we'll see. Where do you
stand morally, Glenn?
I think we had similar discussions with the whole Kevin Spacey thing.
Yeah.
I think Ridley Scott was correct to remove him from all the money in the world.
Yeah.
I think you are. Yeah, you also have to realize, like, for previous works, that you know, there's lots of people involved and you can still enjoy a film on its merits if some controversial star is in it. But I think stuff that is still in production or post-production or yet to be in production, you know, it's right to pause or remove, you know, depending on, you know, the accusations and whether there's any actual evidence to them. Because obviously people are innocent until proven guilty, but I think for some of the Me Too stuff a few years ago, there was quite a lot of evidence that was kind of difficult to ignore. I'm quite surprised that The Flash has still gone ahead, but I think they just needed to get it out. I don't know the ins and outs of the Jonathan Majors situation, but it would probably be in Disney's best interest to sort of pause on him filming stuff until there's more clarity. And then if he's, you know, exonerated, then be like, you know, cool. You know, you welcome him back.
I think even if he is exonerated, there is still going to be clouds over that, over him, to be honest. And there will be people who will boycott, for lack of a better word, I suppose, the stuff that he's in, regardless of exoneration. Because obviously you and I both know that being told that you're innocent doesn't necessarily mean that you're innocent, it just means they couldn't prove that you were guilty.
That's very true. Do you have a different view on it?
I have a very similar view to you, to be honest. I'm thinking from... And it's probably a bit fucked up, to be honest, but from my personal perspective, it depends on what film they're going to be in, whether or not I actively like watch something or not watch something, you know? Because I think I completely understand the stance of saying, right, he's done X, he's going to be in X, so I'm not going to watch X. And I get that, and if I was a better man, I would abide by that. However, I want to see The Flash, I'm not going to lie, and I want to see Avengers Kang Dynasty that just come out, and I want to see Loki season 2. So I don't know, like it's a very weird place morally to kind of put yourself in, because obviously I do have reservations about kind of like the accusations against both Ezra Miller, Jonathan Majors, whomever else, and kind of like, obviously, if there has been any wrongdoing, I am completely against that. But at the same time, I'm going to watch the project, so I'm supporting it. So I'm part of the problem, I guess, in all honesty.
I don't necessarily think that by watching something, you are condoning it. Because again, like I said, you know, these films involve a lot of different creatives, and there's lots of other people's kind of livelihoods that can be affected. If it was something that, you know, say, I don't know, Roman Polanski and the stuff that he is, I'm pretty sure, convicted of. He still manages to make films. And he's like a director and he has a lot of control. So I guess you can sort of, watching one of his films would, again, not be condoning what he did, but I think for a director or someone who writes and directs, or, you know, writes, directs and stars in, like, it's easier to sort of be like, take a stand and go, I'm not watching their films, because they have got quite a lot of creative control. And, you know, working with someone after those kind of accusations and acts, it's kind of like, right, now the people working with these people are problematic in a sense. So yeah, I think it depends. Like I said, the stuff that is yet to be produced, or that's kind of where you sort of have to be like, let's pause. It's the same with what happens to, you know, football players. There was a high-profile Premier League footballer who was accused of quite serious stuff, and apparently all the allegations have been dropped. But yeah, that player is yet to be seen. So yeah, you know, it's in one way that the brands are protecting themselves by distancing themselves from these people. Yeah. But right, Warner Brothers. So they had highlights of films such as Blue Beetle, which I think we've talked about the trailer, Dune Part 2, which, to be honest, I will watch, but I'm not overly bothered about.
Boo, I'm looking forward to it. Boo.
Barbie, Wonka.
Has it come out yet? Wonka, is this the Timothy Chalamet one?
Yeah.
I thought it's coming, I don't know why, I thought that came out years ago.
No, not yet. Apparently it's going to be musical as well, so great.
Okay.
We're also going to have Meg 2, The Trench, and The Nun 2. Yeah, so again, like nothing that I didn't think we sort of knew was coming. Apparently Aquaman's still going to be released at some point. Hey.
Yeah, I think that's supposed to be... do you know what, I find it so funny, like all like the, what's it called, the positive PR that the Flash film is getting, like from... both DC executives and obviously people on the outside, like, I think Tom Cruise apparently said it's one of the best films he's ever seen, da, 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 da. And then you, and then you think about like Aquaman, Blue Beetle and Shazam, they're just getting no love from anyone whatsoever. It's just like, oh yeah, those films are coming out. That's it. You know.
Oh, but Shazam, like, James Gunn was on the press junket for Shazam and The Flash being, you know, being like, these are great, blah, blah, blah. I don't believe him. I don't believe you. Because Shazam was not good. Like, it wasn't terrible, but it was just also not good.
It was average, yeah, for sure.
They're quite, I don't know.
But yeah. With the Flash stuff, do you, are you buying into the hype? Or are you keeping expectations tempered?
I think the trailer looks good. I think, I don't know, I mean, this film's been in development for ages, so I don't know at what point certain story elements were included or expanded, but the trailer certainly... seems to be positioning this as more of like a, hey, you're going to see lots of heroes that you like or haven't seen before.
Yeah.
And the Flash is a conduit to do that rather than this is the Flash. And I think, again, that's sort of them, DC being like, we need to sort of future-proof this franchise and get people to see this without it being the focus is Ezra Miller and the Flash. Mm. So it's kind of, you know, even in... that shot in the trailer where Supergirl is, she's in the middle and there's the two Flashes either side of her, which positions her as like the most important character. And obviously Michael Keaton features quite heavily in the trailer. Ben Affleck's in the trailer, Zod. So you're kind of like, they're positioning it as, come see this film and it's not just going to be Ezra Miller.
Yeah, I think it very, and to be honest, I'd say that's probably quite good marketing on their part. I think, they are marketing it as if it is more of an ensemble film than a Flash film, which I am not angry at, but I think we were saying in the chat that, like, I think from what I'm seeing from this trailer, it seems very like a Spider-Man No Way Home sort of situation, like version of the Flash. And I'm just thinking about, would I have enjoyed Spider-Man No Way Home as much if we hadn't gotten however many appearances from Tom Holland's Peter Parker beforehand? No, I probably would never. And if you hadn't seen kind of like him develop all these things so you could see what he, at the end, what he was sacrificing. And then I'm thinking of trying to convert that into like the Flash terms. Like, we're going to get this kind of like, it seems anyway, this big spectacle, this big sequence of events, like different versions of different characters, different universes, and the Flash is going to sacrifice this and sacrifice that. And, you know, he was saying no one dies and there's two versions of him, blah, 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 blah. But it won't hit as hard. And I hope I'm wrong, but for me, it won't hit as hard because we haven't gotten that core Flash story and that kind of like, we haven't grown up with him in the DC universe or DC films the same way we have with Tom Holland and the various other Spider-Men. So when you get to this point now where, you know, you're seeing different versions of the Flash, you're seeing Michael Keaton, you're seeing Supergirl and all that stuff, I'm a bit like it's a bit bittersweet because although it looks really cool, I think emotionally you're not getting that same feeling because you haven't got that same connection to the Flash as you do with, like, other characters, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. And this has been DC's thing the whole time as they're playing catch up. They haven't really developed Flash's backstory in the appearances he's made. I feel like it's probably the Snyder Cut, but I feel like we've got a bit more. I was a bit more emotionally attached to Cyborg's backstory.
Yeah.
I think that probably was the Snyder Cut, but they did, they did well with that. So yeah, this is basically like, we know the Flash's mum's passed away. I can't remember if we saw it, but we didn't necessarily know her enough to really care. And now it's like, he's going to sacrifice the universe and the multiverse to save her. Okay. I know you're sad, but like, it's not an Uncle Ben thing. It's not Aunt May, you know, with Marisa Tomei, her version of Aunt May passing away in No Way Home. It's like that hit because we've seen her for the three films and numerous other appearances that she's made across the MCU. And I think, to be honest, I think, you know, that not all the Guardians are going to survive in Guardians 3. And that will, you know, because they've built a connection with the audience over however many appearances they've made. So, yeah, I mean, it looks decent. I'm not having kind of particularly high expectations. I feel like James Gunn probably wants this film and Aquaman to come out so that he can just kind of have that as a, you know, a comma or a full stop in DC, and then he can start his new sentence.
Yeah, for sure. Just thinking randomly, yeah. Do you remember when Jason Momoa was on, like, Instagram or whatever, and he was, like, really happy and saying, oh, yeah, just got some great news, like, James Gunn, Peter Safran, thank you, and stuff like that. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Did we ever find out what the fuck that was about?
Well, people were saying, oh, he's going to be Lobo, but I don't think that's the case. I think maybe he's just been told that Aquaman will still be in the DCU, but, yeah, I don't think we've necessarily...
Fair enough. But yeah, that was randomly popped into my head. I was thinking, like, oh, what was that actually about? Anyway, but yeah, the whole DC of it all, I think, is just like, I'm just praying they get a win. Like, by law of averages, they should eventually get a film that is well-received critically and also makes a lot of money. That hasn't happened yet, I don't think. Apart from...
The Batman.
The Batman and Joker, I guess, if you count them.
But crucially, they're not...
Joker was kind of mixed, wasn't it?
Didn't they get nominated for an Oscar?
Oh, it did. Yeah, to be fair, she got nominated for several Oscars. Actually,
did Joaquin Phoenix win?
Yeah, to be fair. Yeah, never mind.
But yeah, it's not the DCEU, is it? They're kind of Elseworld now, or whatever they've kind of retrofitted them to be. Yeah. I'll just move on to Universal. So they've got Oppenheimer coming out. They've announced the title for an Exorcist reboot, continuation called Exorcist Believer. That's Blumhouse, who obviously did the Halloween kind of requel, whatever they call them. I mean, do we need it?
You see, Oppenheimer.
Yep.
Is this going to be what do they call it? You know, like Inglourious Basterds. What do they call it when they remix the truth? I can't remember what the exact term for it is.
Oh, I don't know. Is there a...
Revisionist. Sorry, revisionist.
Ah, revisionist. Right, yeah. Okay.
Is it going to be that sort of situation, or is this just going to be, like, a true story type of situation? Do we know?
I can't imagine Chris Nolan's going to be revisionist. He seems to kind of be quite serious and take things seriously. It's been described as a biographical film.
Okay.
About...
Oh,
the guy who invented the atomic bomb.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, this it's weird because I feel like we kind of have an idea of what happens.
Yeah.
Because it's historical. So is he going to kind of present this as the guy who invents, you know, maybe this guy invents something and it kind of gets out of his control and then it's like, oh shit, what have I done? But I don't know. I don't know how much sympathy you can feel for someone who invented the atomic bomb.
I've watched the trailer for this and I'm just like, I don't know, it was kind of boring to me. I don't know. And I get
The trailer didn't really do anything for me.
No, and I get, like, I think with Christopher Nolan, I think he's now just trying to do new shit. So I think probably we're going to see something visually that's, like, really either groundbreaking or stunning or both. And I think sometimes he just has these things as an excuse for him to kind of just try new stuff. Because, yeah. like Tenet, where it was all, like, the filming all the shit backwards and forwards and playing the crashing his own plane and all that crap.
But is he going to blow up an actual nuclear bomb or what?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised. But, like, yeah, I don't know. That film just is not appealing to me, which is strange for a Christopher Nolan film because I'm normally quite locked into those.
We need a Tenet 2.
Because
at the end of Tenet 1, Robert Pattinson's character says to David Washington's character, "Oh, for me, this is the end, but for you, it's just the beginning. Like, I'll meet you in the middle or something."
Yeah.
And it's like, there's more to come.
Yeah, honestly, I thought that film was really good, and I know that people didn't play it, but, yeah. That's I think if that had not come out during the pandemic, it might have been a different situation, maybe. But wasn't that, Tenet was the last film he did with Warner Bros., wasn't it? And that's what kind of severed the relationship, right?
Because it was released, on streaming quite soon after?
Yeah, something like that, wasn't it?
I mean, Universal can give him loads of money.
True.
Or whoever he's partnered with now.
Do Warner Bros. Have the, like, rights to a Tenet sequel? Kind of thing.
You might be right. Mm. I mean, look, I'm sure they can negotiate these things.
True.
Universal announced, DreamWorks announced Kung Fu Panda 4. I'm going to admit I've never seen any of them.
No, same.
There's My Big Fat Greek Wedding 3. Never seen any of those. They're releasing Fast 10 soon. And then there's a film called The Fall Guy with Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt. And then they've got Wicked, which is the film adaptation of the musical, which, again, I've not seen, which itself is a prequel to Wizard of Oz.
Yeah. When's that coming out?
This year.
Okay, I'll look forward to that. That'd be decent. I hope, anyway.
Then there's Paramount. There's a Transformers animated movie.
Mm.
Cool. Gladiator 2's coming out.
Why?
Because they've run out of original ideas.
Mate, that film does not need a sequel, but whatever.
No, I do need to rewatch it. Haven't seen it in a very long time.
Yeah, I haven't watched it since we were at school, to be fair.
There's a new SpongeBob movie coming out, a new Smurf movie coming out. I feel like we had some Smurf movies not that long ago.
Yep.
Transformers Rise of the Beasts trailer.
Transformers, I've made this is just a side note because so you can know about my life, Glenn. I've made a mini, like, mission for myself to kind of catch up with some of these, like, legacy films so that when these new ones come out, I'm caught up to speed. So one of them being Mission Impossible, so that's why I'm watching them films.
Okay.
The other one being Transformers, which I'm dreading, I'm not going to lie.
Because
the only Transformers I've watched all the way through was that last one with Mark Wahlberg, and that was one of the worst films I've ever seen. And then the third one was, Indiana Jones. I've not seen any of those either, so going through those next year, hopefully.
You can have your own segment then in the next pods.
Yeah.
What you've watched. The first two Transformers, I mean, I get a caveat, I haven't seen them in ages, but the first two I remember being quite good, and then they go downhill. There's an announcement of a Bob Marley biopic called One Love, which I think one of his children is involved in producing. Cool. I'm surprised we haven't had a big blockbuster kind of biopic about him yet.
Yeah, same.
Then John Krasinski was teasing A Quiet Place Day One, which, to be fair, might be quite similar to The Last of Us now that that's come out. Mm. And then Lionsgate, I didn't realise they were considered a big studio. They have got Hunger Games, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, which, to be, you know, I saw the first Hunger Games, not seen any of the others.
No,
they also got Expendables 4, that's happening apparently. Saw 10, that's got a 10th one.
Saw 10? Ten saws? Wow.
Yep. Mm. And then a film called Joyride, which
That looks quite good, I think, alright, if you've seen the trailer for it.
I haven't, but it's from the co-writer of Crazy Rich Asians. When they say things like that, it doesn't fill me with confidence. I've seen films, and it's like, from the co-visual effects artist who was on this film. It's like, what? That's tangential. But yeah, I mean, if you say it looks good, I'll give it a go. But, so nothing kind of too earth-shattering announced at CinemaCon. Although we have managed to quite a while. Is there any other film or TV news that you want to discuss quickly?
I don't think so. No, not really.
No worries. Well, from kind of spiritual sequels, let's talk about Missing. So, did you ever watch Searching?
I did watch Searching.
Searching came out a couple of years ago. Starred John Cho. He was basically looking for his missing daughter. And kind of all played out on his screen or screens. So, yeah, you know, FaceTime, Google Maps, that sort of thing. Mm. And I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a really kind of gripping thriller. And Missing is, yeah, a spiritual sequel, kind of in the same vein. So we follow Storm Reid. She plays June, who she's a teenage girl. Her mum goes away with her new boyfriend to Colombia and doesn't come back. And then we kind of see June and her attempts to locate her mum and her mum's boyfriend. She uncovers, I mean, I'll just talk about what she uncovers kind of in the trailer. The trailer shows that the boyfriend is a felon and, you know, has been messaging other people. And then there's something about, oh, has your mum ever gone by any other name? Mm. So, yeah, kind of that's. I initially watched the trailer and I was like, oh, it gives quite a lot away. But when you watch the film, you realise it doesn't. So I just want to, you know, I really enjoyed this film. It twists and it turns, but it never makes you feel stupid. Or it never does something kind of that doesn't really make sense. Some films will do a twist. And it's like, oh, it was this person. You go, oh, what? Really? The person that we saw in the first scene and haven't seen again. Like, I don't like those sorts of films, but this kept me gripped, kept me guessing. So there's a character called Heather who's like a lawyer, her mum's friend, and she's initially like helpful, comes around to give June some food, and then she starts being quite evasive. And I was like, oh, she's shady. Cause I think in Searching, there was like a character close to John Cho's character who ended up being dodgy. And I was like, oh, Heather's probably in on it somehow. And then there's a link made to the boyfriend, Kevin. And you're like, oh, okay, she's definitely in on it. And then you realise that she isn't when she gets killed. Mm. And then, yeah, I mean, let's talk about it and we'll get into plot details. So there'll be spoilers to follow. But what I really like about this style of film is because you're just contained to what is on the screen, there's very little cut away. The only kind of cuts are when she powers down her computer or, you know, there's a kind of fade to black. So a lot of the tension is maintained. And I'm always like looking around the screen to see if I can see any like little details in the background. So I think it's really effective. And thankfully so far, Hollywood hasn't done it to death. What did you think of it?
Yeah, I'm pretty similar to you, to be fair. I enjoyed it quite a lot. I think, yeah, it did really well to keep you guessing and, like, quite a few twists and turns. It certainly was the ending, the way it ended. This definitely wasn't how I saw it happening. Are we spoiling this or what were we doing?
Yeah, yeah. What did you think was going to, how it was going to end, like, based on what you'd seen so far?
Well, to be honest, I was just kind of, like, following what they were feeding us. I just thought the mum was a criminal, to be fair. And like I thought the mum was just in on it, and it for some reason or another, and I think when they showed the bit where there was a person watching June through the computer screen, through her computer screen. I was like, okay, that's the mum, and she's like, I don't know, she's doing something or other. And I thought the mum had like pulled one over on her boyfriend, or inverted commas boyfriend. But yeah, I guess that wasn't the case at all. So yeah, when it turned out that the dad was alive still, I was like, oh right, that probably like took me by surprise. But generally, I thought it was a good time. Like, I think similar to Searching, I find the style of filmmaking, I suppose, quite unique, I guess, and quite engaging. And just kind of like quite creative, kind of like how they just do it through like little things here and there. I did find it a bit like, maybe not far-fetched, because obviously it is possible, but where at the end, when June was like, call 911 to her own phone, I was like, oh, come on, that's stupid. But I suppose it was definitely possible. So yeah, I thought that was an interesting way to end it. I thought maybe they could have got a bit more creative with that part. But generally, yeah, I liked how they included like these different characters as well, like the lawyer who was trying to help her out, and all that whole mystery. So yeah, I was like you say, I was just following the breadcrumbs that the film was giving me, and obviously then they, you know, yanked the rug from under your feet and said, okay, actually, no, it's not her, she's just been murdered, so it's gonna be someone else. And even like the whole bit with when June is looking closer at the pictures that the boyfriend was sending and realizing that it wasn't her mom. I was like, oh yeah. Shit, this is bad.
Thing, right? So there was a few occasions where I sort of noticed something, and it took June ages to notice it, and it was really frustrating me. So I noticed straight away that you never saw her mum's face in any of the pictures that Kevin was sending. And I was like, that's suspicious. It's probably not her. And then also when she's using Javier through the Task Rabbit thing, which again, I thought was quite clever of a way to get different locations involved.
Yeah.
So he says, oh, you know, they spilt wine on the bed. And I was like, but they both don't drink.
Yeah.
And then like, it took her like 20 minutes to make that connection. And then, The last one that I can remember anyways, yeah, when she was, she noticed the camera in the bedroom when she was kidnapped, and I was like, just shout through the screen to tell your phone to do something. Mm. And eventually she did do it. But yeah, it wasn't like, oh, you're so dumb, it took me out of the film. It was like, I think I've noticed something. You know, I like that you're kind of piecing it together yourself as well.
Yeah.
And then, she eventually did it. So yeah, it's, I really enjoyed it. I hope they do more of these films, but I hope they don't do them to death. Because I remember when, like, sort of steady, what do they call it? Those, like, first person films. Oh, what's found footage.
Yeah.
You know, when that became a thing, and it was like, oh, okay, they've done found footage with Paranormal Activity. Mm. And then, well, obviously, one of the first to do it was Blair Witch Project. But then you just had a whole load of them to the point where every genre was getting a found footage and it just became tired. But so far I'm only aware of two films of this style. So
that's good. It's a good concept, I think. I'd like to watch Searching again to see which one I prefer of the two.
Yeah. But also, did you notice right at the beginning of Missing, so they've done this
Netflix series.
Yeah, Unfiction, I think they called it. Yeah. So right at the beginning, it said like the disappearance of someone, Kim, whatever the daughter was called in Searching. Mm. And it said, oh, you know, starring John Cho. And I was like, oh, are they getting meta with it?
Mm. Yeah, I thought the same thing.
Well, I thought that was really interesting. And then obviously they end up being part of their own Unfiction story.
Yeah.
Yeah, really good. I think I gave it an 8, I think.
Decent. To be fair, I'd probably give it like a... I'd probably give it like a 7, 7.5, I would say. Yeah. I enjoyed it quite a lot.
Definitely the best thriller I've seen this year.
Mm.
I think.
Probably the only thriller I've seen this year, but yeah.
Yeah, to be fair, it might be. I want to talk quickly about a couple of horror films that I've seen. One of which is a comedy horror, Renfield.
Oh, God. Here we go.
Which you thought that your screen unseen might be to the point where you decided not to go.
Yeah.
But I don't think it will be your sort of film, but I enjoyed it.
Mm.
It's a comedy horror. It's over the top in its performance by Nick Cage, who's Dracula. Essentially, we're in like the modern day, and Nicholas Holt plays Renfield, who's Dracula's familiar, his little kind of servant, and he's recovering from basically being exposed to the sun, so he's very weak, and Renfield is going to like self-help groups to, first of all, find targets for Dracula. So the people who are perpetrating the abuse that causes their significant others to go to the self-help group, he's kind of tracking down those perpetrators and bringing them to Dracula, because he realizes that morally, you know, killing people is wrong, but if he kills bad people, then kind of balances out for him. Mm. He then sort of gets tangled up in this kind of crime, it's like drug sort of attack on the city. So Ben Schwartz, who you recognize from certain things, who's in Parks and Rec, he voices Sonic. He's this like heir to the drug empire, but he's a bit shit. He doesn't like violence. He doesn't mind violence, he just doesn't do it himself. And then Awkwafina plays a police detective who is pretty much the only non-corrupt police officer, and sort of, yeah, gets involved with Renfield, and Renfield has got all these skills that if he eats a bug, he can like rip people's arms off and stuff. Mm. So yeah, I mean, it's 95 minutes long. It goes at a decent pace. It's got some laughs. There's a scene where he's fighting some of the drug people, and he grabs this kind of goon by the arms, kicks him in the chest and rips both his arms off, and then uses those as kind of like lances to impale someone else, which was funny in a gruesome way. So yeah, you know, I actually enjoyed it. If you kind of go in knowing that it's going to be silly and a bit over the top, and Nicolas Cage is having a very good time, then you'll enjoy it. If you go into it kind of not liking the recent stuff Nick Cage has done, not kind of being open to the comedy horror, then you're going to hate it.
Is it like a is it like a closed film, or is it a film that they could make another one if it makes enough money, sort of thing?
I think they could. Does Dracula ever really die? You know, it ends quite conclusively, but with any of these sorts of supernatural or mythical villains, they always come back, don't they? So yeah, it could. I don't think it needs to. I don't think it's done too well at the box office.
I'm not surprised, to be completely honest.
It had a budget of 65 and it's made 22, so, but I think maybe it's suffered from cost 65 and has made 22.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, that's terrible.
I don't know if maybe people didn't quite know what it was going to be. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you kind of, the trailer, it makes it, it does kind of give you the comedy horror vibe, but I don't recall seeing a what they would in America call like a Red Band trailer, which might have maybe convince more people to see it. I think probably this is a film that would, if you watched it on Netflix, you would enjoy it. It's like one of those sorts of films. But yeah, you know, I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I would, maybe because my expectations weren't particularly high.
Yeah.
But yeah, and you know, I don't think it'll be your sort of film. But
no, it doesn't look like it, and it doesn't sound like it, but that's after it.
And definitely not your sort of film is Evil Dead Rise.
Mm.
So this is the fifth film entry in the Evil Dead franchise, which started with Sam Raimi's Evil Dead in 1981, was followed by Evil Dead 2, Army of Darkness, which was the third. There was a remake of the original Evil Dead in 2013, with Fede Alvarez directing. And this is kind of, it's not a reboot, it's like a modern version, kind of like a sequel, but without any characters from the previous films that I'm aware of. The sequel, in the sense, is that the Book of the Dead features, and the demons, which they call Deadites in this, are present. So the general story of any Evil Dead film is that someone encounters the Book of the Dead, inadvertently reads or plays a passage from it. In this case, the passage is on some LPs, which this kid plays backwards and releases the demons. And someone gets possessed, or multiple people get possessed, and then kill people. That's, you know, the basic premise of an Evil Dead film.
Mm.
The first four films set in cabins. This one is predominantly set in an apartment block in LA, I think. But it starts with kind of in the same vein that we're used to with Evil Dead films, with some kind of young adults in a cabin. There's a woman who's kind of third wheeling with her sister and her sister's boyfriend. Her sister's not feeling well. The boyfriend's a douche. She goes to kind of complain to her sister about the boyfriend. It's like, are you feeling better? The sister starts moving kind of demonically and talking in a, you know, classic demonic voice. Ends up scalping her sister and killing her boyfriend. And then it says one day earlier. And then we get to the main story of the film, which I presume you don't mind me spoiling it.
No, go for it, man.
I can't imagine you're going to watch it. So we've got Beth, who's like a tour technician with bands. She finds out she's pregnant and then sort of goes to visit her sister in this, you know, derelict apartment block in LA. I think they say it's going to be knocked down in a few weeks, so they're having to move out. Her sister Ellie has three kids, two of them are teenagers, and one of them is sort of, I don't know, looks about 9 or 10. The kids are going to get pizza, so they go down to the bottom, like the car park. Then an earthquake happens. This opens up a hole, which reveals sort of like a underground. The building used to be a bank, and it reveals this vault, which was previously locked. The vault contained the Book of the Dead and some sort of LPs. Then Danny, one of the teenagers who's interested in DJing, kind of takes the LPs and the Book of the Dead, plays the kind of incantation inadvertently, and his mother, who's coming back from the laundry room, ends up being possessed by the Deadites. So I don't know if you've seen the trailer for this, but there's some kind of quite good creepy lines where Cassie, who's the youngest, is like, oh, mummy, like, where are you? And she's like, mummy's with the maggots now, and that sort of that sort of thing. So I've heard people say this film is like super scary. It's not, you know, not at least in my opinion, but I know I've got a very high bar. I don't necessarily expect to go into horror films to be scared. Like, I know it might sound silly, but I just know myself. But what I did like about this film is the kind of physical performance of Alyssa Sutherland, who plays Ellie. So we obviously see her before and after possession, but she does, like, her kind of physical movement is quite apparent, and, you know, she plays it well. The kids are quite annoying, but kids tend to be in films. This film, kind of, like, the first Evil Dead in the 80s was one of those, like, video nasties, if you've heard that terminology. where like the BBFC was sort of like, I think they tried to prosecute it under the Obscene Publications Act or something, because it's quite violent and there's a scene where a tree essentially assaults the main character. This film also tries to push the boundaries of what is acceptable on camera.
What do you mean?
So, like, within the first 2 minutes, someone gets scalped. And then there's the kind of denouement, the last act, features Beth and Cassie. So Danny and Bridget, who are the other teen kids, they end up getting possessed. They end up sort of forming this giant demon monster thing with their mum. They all sort of merge their bodies and limbs and stuff, and this sort of like six arms, six legged demon creature starts chasing them. And then they come across a wood chipper, which you can probably see where this is going. So Beth essentially kills her family, who have been possessed, by first of all chainsawing them and then kicking them into a wood chipper. And there's a lot of red.
Mm.
It's quite violent, but weirdly didn't feel quite as like, didn't feel quite as gratuitous as some of like the Saw films you've seen, or like Hostel, things like that. Like some of the violence in that is like I guess they're trying to make it a bit realistic, whereas like, this has an element of it's over the top. But yeah, I mean, it wasn't quite as good as I had maybe like anticipated with the hype, but it is interesting. It was, you know, a slightly different setting to usual. And they kind of, you know, again, kind of like with the Dracula thing, you can destroy the Book of the Dead, you can destroy the Deadites, but they will come back. And because obviously the prologue is essentially one day after the main thrust of the film, we know that, you know, the Deadites have possessed someone else. So they've got scope to expand it or continue it, which, you know, again, you know, they could just keep changing setting, just keep changing who's been possessed. But this film does attempt to kind of have a narrative of, so Beth obviously finding out she's pregnant, there's a few occasions where they kind of link possession to pregnancy in terms of like, oh, you have something inside you that you didn't necessarily want or ask for. So there's, you know, some interesting family drama that they try and do there, and that does, it's different to the teens are in a cabin and die. So I kind of appreciate that. But yeah, so definitely not one for you, but Evil Dead Rise.
Yeah, that does not sound appealing to me whatsoever. But, I'm glad you, you know, went to go see it and stuff. But yeah. Not one for me. Honestly, I saw one look at that trailer, I said, absolutely not. No way. Hey, hey, hey.
I would love to see how you fare with it.
I'll be finished. You know,
you're fine with violence. There's no jump scares or stuff.
Yeah, but even without jump scares, I still, it's the tension that gets me. Like, I get tense, I get sweaty, my hands get sweaty, I don't like it.
Talk to us about your, what did you call it, your heritage yeah. watches. So, what have you watched?
Heritage. So, I'm only starting with, to be honest, I don't know which one comes out first. So obviously the three legacy films that are coming out this year is Mission Impossible, Back to Future, Indiana Jones, and what the fuck was the third one again? Transformers. I mean, not necessarily legacy, because Transformers came out in like 2008, but, you know, just plenty of them. Which I haven't watched, so I want to catch up, so I have full context when I'm watching. So yeah, I'm starting with Mission Impossible. So I've only watched the latest one, which was the Henry Cavill one. I think it was Fallout, Mission Impossible Fallout.
Oh yeah, I enjoyed that.
Same, which in and of itself I think is a good film, and I went in it and I didn't have any problems. Well, I didn't have any problems understanding like the background. I think I remember when I watched it, I was getting a bit confused as to who was on whose side and stuff like that. And, you know, I wasn't sure who was double-crossed and who. But I wanted to go back and watch these ones so that I have, like, so I'm fully aware of, like, what's going on, any callbacks, any Easter eggs, stuff like that, when they come out this year. And also Mission Impossible, is it Dead Reckoning, I think is the name, Part 1, looks fucking insane. So, yeah, quite looking forward to that. Generally, because I just want to see what Tom Cruise wants to do next, to be fair. But yeah, so I've gone back, watched Miss Impossible 1. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I've seen the first one.
Okay, cool. It's fine. I remember watching it thinking, like, it came out in 1996, and I remember watching it thinking, like, yeah, Tom Cruise hasn't quite hit it as, like, the guy yet. Like, he's getting there, but I don't know. I think maybe the writing for that film wasn't the best. Along with his dramatic acting is also not the best. Like he's very good with like the don't give a shit cool guy persona. Like that's very much his avenue, I think. But when he has to come, when it comes down to like the more dramatic moments, like there's a moment in that film where pretty much at the beginning where he loses most of his team. And then he acts quite like paranoid and stuff like that. That's where it kind of like falls down a little bit.
Yeah, I think that the first one had an element of just being like a kind of run-of-the-mill thriller.
Yeah.
You know, there's that train sequence at the end, which was quite cool. And obviously the famous bit where he sort of rappels, like he sort of is held up from the ceiling and lowered down.
Yeah.
But I think it's the later ones, particularly the ones in the last 10 years, that he's just pushing the boundaries of like stunts.
Yeah, literally. I think... Exactly that, yeah. So the first one and two, to be fair, are fairly basic. Number two, also, yeah, it was nice to see where, like, because obviously I've seen, like, the cultural impact that the Mission Impossible films have had in other media. So, like, obviously the theme song, the dropping down from the building, like you just mentioned, along with that in number two, where he's, like, sliding across the floor and shooting as he's sliding across the floor. So, like, I've seen that in other media, but obviously to see where it originated from was pretty cool. But number two reminded me very much of, like, Too Fast, Too Furious. They saw the first one, they thought, okay, this is decent. The second one, they've kind of, like, gone with a completely different storyline and also try to ramp it up, but it just doesn't work. The second one's quite bad, I'm not gonna lie.
I'm not sure if I've seen it.
So it's the one with Thandi Newton.
I don't know. I think I'll need to rewatch them because I've never seen 3, 4, or 5.
Fair. I think 5 is Rogue Nation.
Yeah, I've definitely not seen that one.
Yeah. So yeah, the second one. It's a bit all over the place. Like they're getting this new love interest, Thandi Newton. They have questionable chemistry, and then there's this what's it called? It's this stereotypical British or English bad guy, and it was very much like Anthony Hopkins is in it. I was like, wow, that's random. And yeah, it's not great to be honest with you. And the storyline's not very clear. And it's one of them ones where I'm watching it thinking like, well, couldn't you just do this instead, and then that would pretty much solve your problem. But yeah, it was fine. I didn't like his hair in the second one either. He like grows out his hair for the second one. It doesn't look great. So yeah, that. So in terms of the win-loss column, we're 1-1 at the minute. I'm not gonna lie.
Okay.
But yeah, moving on to the third one at some point this week, I would say, and hopefully yeah, get caught up before they comes out in I think July. I think it comes out.
I think I've got them all on DVD, so I don't really have an excuse not to watch them. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I feel like for me, it's sort of because the newer ones are so visually impressive. You kind of always think, is something made in 2000 going to just look shit?
Yeah.
Or like sometimes they're very off their time. You could maybe watch a sequence from a film, not know which film it was or when it was made and sort of hazard a guess. Oh, this was probably made in the late 90s, early noughties. But yeah, cool. Keep us up to date. We need to come up with a title for this segment.
Yeah, we do.
Obi's Corner. I don't know. Give us a tweet if you think of a decent name.
Please do. But yeah, I'm going to try it. So that's that one. And obviously, I think they come out at quite similar times, the films. I think Transformers comes out in maybe June July-ish as well. And I think Indiana Jones same. So I'm going to try and get on all of them and try and get caught up.
I've seen the first three Indiana Jones. I've never seen the fourth one.
The fourth one's the Shia LaBeouf one, right?
Yeah. I mean, you're going to have there's going to be at least three films you're watching soon with Shia LaBeouf in. Because he's in the first two Transformers.
Yeah. I completely forgot he was in Transformers, yeah.
I mean, he's a actor who's had a troubled past and his career has kind of suffered from it.
It has, to be fair. But he's quite a good actor.
He is a good actor, yeah.
I didn't have thought it when he was in Even Stevens.
Oh, that is a throwback. Yeah, that's Mission Impossible 2. On the same theme, you've been watching The Night Agent. So how are you finding that? Because, I mean, I've seen it all. I think we've talked about it with Chris as well. But how are you finding it?
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. It very much reminds me, like, going back to, like, you know, I'm a big fan of 24. So it does have, like, that sort of vibe. You've got this secret agent who's, like, you know, willing to do anything to, like, protect the asset. And, you know, he's also willing to kind of like maybe bend the rules, break the rules a little bit. So yeah, I'm quite liking that vibe to it. I'm interested in, like, obviously I'm on episode 4, I've only watched 3 episodes, but I like the fact they're keeping me guessing as to who's the traitor, like what's going on sort of thing. I thought it was wild. I think it was episode 2, or maybe it's even episode 1, I don't know. The couple who are like both assassins or whatever, who steal the baby.
Oh, yeah.
And then they're just chilling, like, and they leave the baby in the house and they fuck off. I was like, rah, they just left the baby unattended.
Yeah, I remember thinking that was shocking.
I was like, yeah, like, that's a bit deep. But so maybe you can answer a question for me. Maybe they answer it in going forward in the show. So when they go to that house with the baby and all that, and they kill that woman and they take something from the house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do we find out what that thing is?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Because I was a bit like, oh. I was thinking, like, did they really have to kill that woman? But, you know, I guess.
Yeah, they don't take any prisoners.
Yeah.
Literally. Yeah, I mean, what do you find anything? Let me reword my question. Do you like it because it's familiar in the sense of, you know, you like these sorts of shows? Or is there anything about it that you are enjoying because it's slightly different? Does it do anything differently to the sorts of shows you tend to watch in this genre?
I wouldn't say it does anything particularly unique, but I will say I like a slight element of the fact that it's not all like this guy, the main character, I can't remember his name for the life of me.
Peter.
He's like, obviously he's your protagonist, he's your hero, but he's not perfect. I quite like that. Even the beginning when he saved the people on the train, like he found out afterwards that obviously like one person died. And then I'm thinking about one thing that stuck out in my mind was when he takes the girl, I can't remember the girl's name, was it Rose?
Yeah.
Rose, and rescues her from the hotel. And when they're like on that glass ledge thing, and he was like, oh yeah, trust me. And then the glass just breaks.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh shit, because you wouldn't expect it to happen. You expect it to be all right. But like, it just goes to show that he's not, you know, superhuman. Like, he is going to fuck up kind of thing. Not necessarily going to mess everything up, but like, not everything's going to go plain sailing sort of thing, which I quite enjoy about it, I would say.
There's also the fact that, I've just double checked that it's not a spoiler because you should have already seen it, but Hawkins, when Director Hawkins, the FBI guy, and he's sort of like, oh, he's shady as hell, and then he dies, and you're like, oh,
yeah,
damn, I thought he was going to be set up as this sort of adversary who, you know, is the bad guy, but he keeps trying to undermine the investigation, but no, it's like episode 2, bam.
Well, I actually thought that he was going to be, I thought they were going to set him up to be like, and I thought it was going to maybe go all the way up to like, I don't know, episode 8 or something, where they set him up to be the bad guy, but in the end, he's the one who's been helping them the whole time or whatever. And it's actually, I reckon the chief of staff, I reckon she's a bit shady. I don't know why I think she's shady. I have no reason to think that, but I reckon there's something going on with her that we're going to maybe reveal in a few episodes of time. But I don't really know yet.
Good old Hong Chau, she's had a decent year.
Yeah, she was in a Darren Aronofsky film. What was it called?
The Whale.
That's the one.
She was also in The Menu.
She was in the menu. Yeah,
she was really good. She was really good in the menu.
Yeah,
she was also really good in The Whale. You know, deservedly nominated. So okay, cool. So you're enjoying The Night Agent. That's good. We'll keep up to date with the progress. I think Chris and I have both seen it.
Yes. Yeah, I need to get caught up. I would like to, if you spot anything, I want to try and find like another original series that we can all like watch and view.
Yeah, there's one on Netflix at the moment called The Diplomat, which apparently is decent.
I've seen the trailer for that. The woman in it is in a BBC show that I was watching. She was quite good in it, so.
Yeah, she was also in Cocaine Bear, wasn't she?
Cocaine Bear.
Who's the mother? The kids that...
Was she in that? Oh, I'm only thinking of someone different then.
Oh.
Oh, right. Was she... She's British in real life, isn't she? Or am I making it up?
I think we might be talking about different things.
I think we are as well.
Yeah. I think it's quite, you know, these sorts of shows are quite generic. Oh, but,
fair enough. Yeah. I think they're completely different.
Maybe I'm thinking of a different thing. But yeah, we'll find something to watch. But from, you know, talking of Hong Chau being nominated for an Oscar to a film that was nominated for Best Picture and Best Director, as well as Best Original Screenplay, I watched Ruben Östlund's Triangle of Sadness, which is currently on Amazon Prime. I've never seen one of his films before, but he's done a film called The Square and Force Majeure. I think both of those are Swedish language films. Mm. This one is English language, although the majority of the cast are from various European countries. It is a social satire, essentially, which apparently his other films are as well. This stars Harris Dickinson, who played Richard Attenborough in, what was that film which had Saoirse Ronan in? Catch Me If You Can. You know, the whodunit one that came out.
Oh, God. Last year. See How They Run?
Yeah, something like that, yeah. So he played Richard Attenborough in that one. So, are you going to watch this film? Have you heard of it?
I have heard of it. I'm not sure if I'll get around to watching it, so feel free to
I won't go into too much detail. But essentially, it starts off, we meet Carl, who's Harris Dickinson. He's a male model. There's sort of a satirical sort of scene where all these male models are, you know how models are like deadpan, they just walk, they kind of shuffle along and turn around and fuck off. So there's like this casting, and the Carl is there, and the casting director's like, just do a walk for me. He does a walk, and it's like, okay, like, look unhappy. He looks unhappy. It's like, but have your mouth slightly open, not that open, bit less open. And then the casting director's like, right. So, sad face is your Balenciagas and your high-end brands, and then happy is H&M, cheap and cheerful and all that sort of stuff. And there's like it's quite funny. He's dating someone called Yaya, who's also a model. They have kind of arguments about money, because in modelling, apparently women tend to earn more than men, which I guess is understandable. And then there's this whole, like, he feels a bit emasculated because she pays for stuff and he doesn't necessarily have as much money. They then end up on a yacht. They get kind of a free, you know, influencer-style trip to this yacht with lots of other rich people on from various European countries. And then there's kind of... you kind of see the differences between the different kind of social classes. So... all of the... Have you ever seen Below Deck?
I don't think so.
Okay, that's like a reality show set on a yacht, but about the... follows the staff and stuff. But so all of the kind of stewards, the people that will serve you your drinks and stuff, they are generally white and young. The majority of the guests are older and mostly white. And then all of the people who are like your service... you know, the engine room, the cleaners, they are generally kind of Latin, Latino, or maybe Filipino. So there's clear sort of, yeah, class boundaries there. But something happens. There's a scene where they have a captain's dinner and it's in the middle of a storm. And because the staff are told you cannot say no to any of the guests, one guest in particular wants all of the staff to slide down the inflatable slide into the sea. So, okay, they have to, but the chef says, look, if you're taking all my staff, dinner's not going to be very good. But anyway, they all go down the slide, and then at captain's dinner, everybody gets food poisoning, apart from the captain, because he doesn't like fine dining. So all of these like really rich people are like shitting themselves and vomiting everywhere and all of this sort of thing. It just becomes a bit kind of farcical. And then, well, I won't say too much more, but some more stuff happens, and then you kind of, the fragility of the upper classes and the rich sort of become apparent, and then they have to sort of lean on the real world expertise of people who they have viewed as below them. And so there's this kind of like flipping of the hierarchy, which I thought was really interesting. It's quite long, but it's 2.5 hours, but it didn't necessarily drag. It has enough sort of social satire for you to keep engaged, and some enough sort of crazy stuff to sort of be like, okay. You can definitely read into this on a number of levels, but also if you don't, then you can still enjoy it for what it is. It doesn't necessarily have like tons of plot. It's more about the commentary on the classes. I wonder if you watch this, because you've got like more of a politics background than me, I feel like this is a very kind of pro-socialist film, but I would be interested to see what your reading of it is. So yeah, it's I enjoyed it. It's a bit out there. It's definitely got that art house vibe to it.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily know why it was nominated for Best Picture, but it's definitely worth a watch.
Fair enough. I might give it a try. Did you watch it in the cinema?
No, I watched it yesterday on Amazon Prime.
Oh, okay, so on Amazon Prime. I didn't know that. Okay. Might give it a try.
Check it out. And I will go and watch some of his other films, just to see if they are as satirical. We've watched Jury Duty, but I'll wait for Chris for that. Have you started that at all?
No, I haven't, to be fair. It hasn't really been on my radar. But you guys have given it quite good reviews, so I might give it a shot at some point.
Yeah, I don't think there's tons to necessarily talk about with it, but it's good. Interesting concept as well. And then I guess we should wait for Chris to talk about The Mandalorian.
Makes sense. Did we not talk about it, really?
I think we still had one episode left.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. Yeah, no,
I don't remember talking about how it ends.
That's fair. But yeah, no, it makes sense to wait. I was going to ask, unless you had something else you wanted to...
No.
Review?
Nope.
No? What you were thinking in terms of Guardians 3?
Looks good.
As in, like, what do you think? Who do you think is going to die? Or if you think anyone's going to die? Like, if it's shit, like, is Marvel in, like, serious trouble? Like,
Well, I'll answer that question first. Yes. If it's not good, then yeah, I think we have to have a conversation. But it does look good. I wasn't too hot on the second one. I know you love it. I don't necessarily think it was bad. I also rewatched Guardians 1 a couple of years ago, and it wasn't quite as good as I thought it was initially. But
you know what? I watched it on Friday, just gone, and I had the exact same thought. I was like, I still enjoy this a lot, but it's definitely not as good as I remember. Especially for some reason. Sorry to interrupt you. For some reason, I remember being really attached to the soundtrack when it first came out. But then on this rewatch, I was like, I don't know. I feel like it just wasn't as prominent as when I first watched it. Maybe it was because in the cinema, in the theatre or something, but I don't know. Yeah.
I think, like, when it came out, it was very different to the other MCU films, and so that probably worked in its favour, but on rewatch, it doesn't maybe hold up quite as well.
Yeah. I still love it, like, don't get me wrong, but yeah, it wasn't as good as I remembered it being.
Yeah. But, I mean, this one, whilst it does have the humour elements to it, it definitely has that sort of Infinity War Endgame feel to it, where it's like, you're having to say goodbye to some of these characters. Mm. And so it does have that sort of darker element to it as well. There's obviously shots in the trailer of Rocket, who looks like he's under threat, and Peter Quill's anguished and stuff. Obviously, we don't know the context of those yet, but it does definitely look like some people will say goodbye to them. Zoe Saldana's kind of said that she's done with Gamora. I don't necessarily think Gamora will die, because if she does, they might well have just let her die in Infinity War.
Exactly.
Or in game, whichever one it was. I feel like the people who are going to die, I feel like Drax will die, because I think Dave Bautista's done. He'll probably want quite a conclusive ending to his arc. I think Rocket will die because it seems quite heavily signalled in the trailer that he will. I also think that will probably have the biggest emotional impact for people. There seems to be quite a few Rocket stans.
I think, I'm a bit torn on Rocket, because I feel like all the marketing has been geared towards it seeing like he's going to be the one to die, but I just feel like they won't. They'll flip reverse it on us, and he won't be the one.
But then we all sort of knew that Tony Stark and Captain America were going to die I guess Captain America didn't really die, but we're going to sort of not go beyond the game. I don't really see Peter Quill dying.
No.
I feel like he's probably someone that they might bring back in the future.
I could see Nebula dying, but I reckon I could see her dying by maybe somehow sacrificing herself for Gamora, or kind of doing something she does, saves Gamora's life and impacts her, kills her, because then it would make it come full circle from them two hating each other to then them sort of mending their relationship in a second one, to then now her being giving her life for her sort of thing. I reckon that might be.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I think that's probably a decent arc, and then it's kind of done. I do see maybe Peter Quill being kind of a Thor figure in terms of he doesn't necessarily have, he just pops up now and he's continuing. Will pop up here and there. Yeah, Gamora, I don't think we'll die, but we're not going to see her in the future. Mantis couldn't care less, to be honest. Groot has, he's a different Groot we saw in the first one anyway, so don't necessarily care about that. I do think it looks good. I think I'm interested to see the High Evolutionary as a villain.
I've heard good things about him.
And I'm interested to see what they do with Adam Warlock, so Will Poulter. Mm-hmm. I am looking forward to it.
Me too. I think for me, because I know most people are not of my opinion, but I have a really soft spot for the second one. And I think I'm that way because I think it really delivers emotionally. And I feel like if Guardians 3 can hit me on that same level, then I'm automatically going to like it, I would say.
Okay. Also, it's, according to the BBFC rating, will be the first MCU film to have the F word in it.
Yeah, I remember someone said, was it Chris Pratt says fuck or something like that? Which I find quite funny. I don't know if I need that, to be honest. I feel like you could just not do that. But I don't know, to each their own. Maybe it's going to be funny. I don't know.
Yeah, so I don't know if it was a legit quote or sort of so much fake news now, but there was a quote I saw from James Gunn where he said that Kevin Feige was like, James, you don't want to be the first person to have an F word in the MCU. And James was like, I absolutely do. Do you not know me? it's probably one of those weird sort of taboos that you kind of just need to get over. You know, we're going to have presumably language galore in Deadpool 3. So if you have one in a 12, then it's sort of like, okay, cool, we're over this now.
And we did get a sex scene in Eternals, to be fair.
We did. Yeah. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Comes out, I think, Thursday in the UK.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that next time. We'll also talk about Infinity Pool, because I'm going to see that later today.
Mm.
Another horror film. Another Mia Goth film. She's in everything this year.
Doing all right, isn't she?
Yeah. Who apparently is going to be in Blade. So
if that ever starts filming.
Yeah, apparently that's being the script's having a rewrite by a guy called Nick Politzato, who did True Detective, which Mahershala Ali was also in one of those series.
Okay.
We'll still see if it ever comes out. I'm not sure what else is coming out in the cinemas. Is there anything else that I've missed?
So yeah, I'm still going plan on seeing Polite Society. Might go see that tonight, actually. I think it looks alright, but fair enough. And then there's also George Foreman, The Miraculous Story of something, something, something.
Of the past and future heavyweight champion of the world or something like that?
Yeah.
I mean, that's got Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of one Harley Quinn.
Literally. I think you'd just call it Big George Foreman and be done with it. But anyway. There was also a film, which I'm probably not going to see, but I feel like in my cinema heyday, I would have probably looked and seen. And I don't know if you've seen the trailer for it. It was the Unlikely Pilgrimage of Harold Fry. There's Jim Broadbent. And I know, and like if you've seen the trailer, they give away pretty much the whole story in the trailer. But it looked like quite a sweet film, and I kind of want to see it. But I'm not going to prioritise it over anything. I'm only going to see it if it's absolutely fuck all to watch, and I've got stuff to watch other than that, so I'm probably never going to see it. But it looks decent.
Every couple of months, there's always these British films that are very clearly geared towards older people.
Yeah.
And none of them appeal to me.
Yeah.
There was that one, Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris. Snooze. There was one called, like, Alleluia, which was basically,
yes,
like, elderly people... in some sort of like care home, like,
That looked really bad. Did you ever watch the one with Saoirse McKellen and Meryl Streep, that thriller one?
No, you watched that one though, didn't you?
Yeah, that was really good.
I mean, if it's a thriller, fine, but if it's just some like boring drama about elderly people, not really that bothered.
That's fair.
The exception being The Father with Anthony Hopkins.
Oh, mate, what film that was?
Yeah. There was a kind of sequel to that called The Son, which came and went. Yeah, starring Hugh Jackman.
Oh, I don't remember hearing about that.
Yeah, I don't think it was quite as well received as the first one. Same director though, same writer. He's adapting his own plays. And there's a third one called The Mother, which I presume they'll make at some point.
Mm.
Okay. But yeah. So that is it for today. Thank you for tuning in. As I said, we'll talk about Guardians and many other things when we next convene. Just to remind you, you can follow us on social media. We are on Twitter at YSCPodcast17, Instagram and TikTok now, under Your Average Critics. Did you ever find out what series you were referring to? You've realised that Kerry Russell and Holiday Granger are different people, but...
Yes, it was the Capture on BBC, was what I was
thinking. Oh, The Capture.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, that's not the person I was thinking of at all. but she's definitely been in something that I've seen, but I can't remember what it is. Kerry Russell, that is.
Oh, right. Yeah, she was in Cocaine Bear.
No, but something else, I feel like. Something else. Not Cocaine Bear. No, I don't know. No, I'm chatting shit. Never mind.
He was in films such as, not stalling for internet loading up at all, she was in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, Rise of Skywalker, Mission Impossible 3, which you haven't actually seen yet.
No. I'm looking for IMDb. Maybe Scrubs. I don't know. I'm wilding. Anyway. No worries.
Cool. Well done for realizing they're different people. And
I'll tell you again, I'll say it once, say it again. Some of these white women all look the same to me.
Boy.
Cancel me if you want.
Do you know what? You could get away with it. I don't know. Double standards, do you know what I mean? Yeah, but anyway, tune in next time.